You're tuned in to another episode of Tales from the First Tee. I'm Rich Easton, telling tales from beautiful Charleston, South Carolina. In this episode, I'll share a recent experience, maybe an epiphany, of finding and losing a golf swing in the same round. I'll talk about how many things am I subscribed to, and once I figured it out, what did I do about it? Did you know in 3 years from now, you can no longer eat dogs in South Korea? A recent trip to St. Petersburg to celebrate my mom's 95th birthday. But first, it's all about putting.
Man, I hit 'em fat, and I hit 'em thin. I roll 'em in the bunkers, man, I hit 'em again. Slice 'em in the bushes, crank 'em in the creek. I pop that sucker up and hook it out in the street. Yeah, I'm 245, right down the middle, and I'm Mr. Green to the left, just a little.
That's right. Putting. When I decide to re-engage myself into my favorite sport, I tend to spend a disproportionate amount of time at the golf course practice area. Now, if I carve out 2 hours, that might seem like a lot to you, but I'll spend more than half of it on and around the putting green. I mean, it's far less sexy than teeing it up at the driving range and hitting drivers and fairway medals until my hands bleed. Although, in recent years, my lower back will signal me to stop well before my fingers are numb. As I think back, my best scores were never the result of hitting the longest drives or throwing darts at the pin despite the likelihood of a better score on those holes. But all in all, my lowest scoring and money-making rounds can be attributed to one thing: less putts. There's a recent stat that most PGA announcers boast about when a player is going low, and it's total feet of putts. The larger the number, the most likely the PGA pro is sinking more longer putts for eagles, birdies, and par saves that are affecting their awesome performance. Case in point, this weekend at the AT&T Pro-Am at Pebble Beach on Saturday, Wyndham Clark, a two-time winner on the PGA, including a win at the 2023 U.S. Open, fired a record 60 at Pebble Beach with 190 feet of hold putts. 190 feet. Let me put that in perspective. Over 18 holes, that would be like sinking 18 10.5-foot putts in a row. Virtually impossible. I mean, from the casual viewpoint of a viewer, you would say, what is this guy putting with? Well, he and Ricky Fowler revived the popularity of the Odyssey Versa Jailbird putter, originally released in 2014. After Ricky Fowler used it and started winning and playing really well, he and Wyndham Clark play around together, and then Wyndham is like, I've got to get this putter. Ricky is not missing anything. So after Wyndham Clark puts it in his bag, he wins a tournament. And then all of a sudden, the Jailbird on eBay, the valuation goes up like 10x. It used to be selling for, I don't know, 70 or 80 bucks, maybe 100. When I went to look for it after they both started winning, it was well over $1,000, and there were none left. Now, I've tried the Jailbird putter with the extended shaft and the 17-inch grip, and I would tell you that it has a nice feel, but there's more to it. And the more to it is, you're going to hate this, hours of practice. Hey, look. The secret is out again. New equipment and golf lessons have something in common. If you don't waste your valuable personal time practicing with your new insights about the secrets to a better swing consistency or your new and improved equipment, you're likely to fall back into the rut that brought you to the pro or the golf shop in the first place. And even with practice, there's a chance that you'll have some bad swings, days, and sometimes weeks of going backwards. But more time spent practicing reduces the likelihood of all of these long slumps and disasters. When you start to ponder about, how do you really want to spend your free time? Do I go back to my boat? Do I buy a boat? Ooh, do I start crossword puzzles? And if you decide practice is your thing, you want to re-engage yourself, you want to rededicate yourself to the sport, you want to get better, you're tired of losing money to your best buddies on the golf course, which I have been doing for the last 2 months, then I suggest this. Go to the practice area, force yourself to spend more time putting than hitting shots on the range. It's less sexy, but I think you'll score better. We'll see. Oh, and just a side note, if you're one of my buddies that listens to this podcast and is out playing with me, and I miss a few putts, know this. I still need more practice. I still need more practice, but I'm dedicated to getting better, and I will make that putt that makes a difference. It's just a matter of when.
You can't put me down for if I...
Another trip to St. Pete, Florida.
Let me ask you a question. You see somebody in a hat that says St. Petersburg, Florida. Do you want to go there?
As artists.
As what?
We have an obligation. Let me tell you something. Non-pros, there's nothing they love more than when actors tell them what they think.
Wow. What a mouthful.
So I've been traveling to St. Pete Beach for over 40 years. Still to this day, I'm fascinated with the before and after effects of urban development and renewal, facelifting, overhauling, and reimagining the area into a better destination. And when I say that, I'm really talking about downtown St. Pete. Now, while the downtown looks nothing like it did when I first visited, St. Pete Beach profile hasn't really changed. No high-rises, mostly older hotels, a place where time seems to have stood still. I still like popular destinations that have kept their charm over the years, and I think that's what attracts people to Charleston. In St. Pete, someone or group in the city councils must have had a thing for keeping what's working and rejecting developers' renderings for improvements that'll make it better, more jobs, more businesses, more local wealth. And because they've kept it that way, I still like walking the beaches there. I mean, there's a thing that I do every time I come to town where I drive down to Pasagril Beach, which is south of St. Pete Beach, and then I walk up to the Don Cesar Hotel and back. And the Don Cesar is one of the coolest hotels on the beach. They call it the Pink Palace, and it is outstanding. But every other hotel, for the most part, on the beach hasn't done much of anything. But the fact that the city has prevented a lot of them from going higher in the air, you know, 10, 20, 30 stories tall, it just makes the beach more quaint. The face of the beach just has a much better impression than if you were going to go to like a Miami or even north of St. Pete, Madeira Beach, where they've allowed high rises to proliferate. But the downtown St. Pete area, totally different than the beach. Newer hotels, high rises overlooking the bay, incredible restaurants, museums, performing arts centers, great shops. I mean, they've done a great job to attract people to come down there. And the nightlife rivals that of any city in Florida, second to Miami. But what do I know? Between 9 and 10 o'clock at night is typically my bedtime. Anyway, back to my mom's 95th. The organizing and execution fell squarely on my shoulders with great counsel from my brother and cousin Karen and financial underwriting. First, we thought about an intimate gathering, but the more we spoke, we all agreed that celebration gatherings were far better and more fun than funerals. I think our list grew from around 10 to 25, and that might seem small to some of you, but considering that virtually none of our family lives in the state of Florida, I thought it was like a pie in the sky estimate. That's a big number. I was blown away when 22 invitees said yes. We had to change the venue two times, and after we learned, I should say relearned, that our first choice couldn't accommodate the growth we had, the second place we engaged with demonstrated how they were just not set up for big parties, just by their lack of follow-up, as well as kind of like deer-in-the-headlight responses to what-if questions, simple what-if questions. You know, like, what if the count goes up or down? What if we bring our own wine? What if we decorate our own cake and bring our own cake? And the person that was in charge of this venue couldn't answer any of those questions, had to get back to me, and never did. So I found a third venue only with 30 days notice. Birch and Vine, connected to the Birchwood Hotel, was by far the best solution for what our needs were. Maybe because of the era I was brought up in as a boomer, but I've never given up on the hope for good service. You know what I'm talking about. You go into a coffee shop, you just want somebody to greet you, take your order, and then be able to deliver what you want in a short amount of time. You go to a restaurant, you'd like the wait staff to acknowledge you and then deliver what you ordered. And quite often, I go to restaurants where I order one thing and another thing shows up, and I've gotten to the point where I've almost think that ordering is just a suggestion. But you can't give up the hope on good service. So anyway, we connected with this restaurant attached to a hotel, and the gal who ran it was Johnny on the spot, or I should say Josephine. She got back to me really quickly. She made changes when we wanted to make changes. She delivered us a staff the night of the party that was like, what can we do? What can we do? Our numbers kept going up and down, and they're like, we'll accommodate you. We'll accommodate you. We'll throw in a seat. We'll pull out a seat. We told them that we wanted to bring our own desserts, because person who does not want to be named makes the best small comfort cheesecakes ever, and they were a hit. As a matter of fact, at the end of the dinner, one of my cousins said, it was great to see you. I haven't seen you in over 10 years. But those cheesecakes were even better. And that's a testament. You know, I always try and wonder why there's a certain trend. And what is it about the lack of service, or, you know, somebody farms out their service to a third party, to somebody who English language is not their first language, and they're reading from a script. And I think part of new technology, saving money, there are these unintended consequences where our love of technology is like this decoupling we go through when we work remotely, homeschool, have an inseparable bond with our phones or tablets. That's why I'm blown away by companies that value and recognize good service in their employees. It wasn't an accident that Ziggy, Salvador, and Mika, the three associates that were in charge of our party, didn't miss a beat. The food was out of this world, and their team's agility in responding to exceptions and anything that we needed done was done. It was a sight for sore eyes. Anyway, I digress. Here's an interesting factoid. All of the attendees in aggregate traveled over 62,000 miles round trip to celebrate Mom's 95th birthday. Think about that. That's more than two trips around the circumference of the Earth. That is more than Magellan and all of his circumnavigators traveled in their lifetimes. It was a big deal. And it was a big deal because my mom was a big deal. At 95 years of age, she still remembers everybody's special occasion. And while she can't travel anymore, she sends money. She makes her own cards. She's a big deal. I think that everybody that attended left with a feel-good that's hard to compare to. The party went so well that Mom made a proclamation at the end of the night that we do this annually. I don't know, Mom, but it was a pretty good party. Other than the formal celebration at the restaurant, I had time to spend with my family. It was really two parts. The first part was, how's your life going now? And then the drinks started flowing and more libations. And then it became, remember when you used to do that thing, whatever that thing was? Do it again. Do it again. They're going back like 40 years, 50 years, so I could go back and be my goofy self. But I didn't take the bait. But my well-published and highly regarded in the field of medicine brother did his famous pig face. He's been doing that in family photos for over 50 years. And all of our grown-up cousins still laughed at it again when they asked him to do it. I mean, go back in time. Imagine when you would take all these family photos. And when you're taking a family photo, all you can see is the person behind the camera. You can't see the people to the left or the right. And you didn't have digital photographs back then, so you couldn't look at it right away. So a day or so after these special events, we would send the film out to be developed and printed. And then when you get them back, while flipping through the pics, and finally you come to that one family photo, that one thing that you're going to put in the album to remember it, and you look at the family photo, and there's everybody smiling, looking their best, they're all dressed up, and there's Michael, now Dr. Michael, making a pig face every single time. And then my mom would be like, oh, Michael, you did it again. And he would just laugh. That's been his thing. And the cousins loved it and remembered it. And they don't care that he's Dr. Michael Easton. They just want to see Michael with a pig face. And by the way, I would not do my Jerry Lewis imitation again, even though I was pretty good at it back then.
Would you like me to put these in the locker for you?
Well, I certainly would appreciate it. That you're very kind. I would have put them there had I known that there was some form of restriction. Some people use them for a facade. I wear them for eyes. You see, for eyes, it's a play on eyes.
So anyway, it was great catching up with everybody and remembering the good times, which is also now. Holy moly, how many subscriptions am I paying for?
Whenever I'm about to do something, I think, would an idiot do that? And if they would, I do not do that thing.
So I'm reading this article by Ben Cohen, a journalist from the Wall Street Journal, and I think it was about the real reason that we're paying for so many subscription services. And it got me to stop and think about everything that I'm subscribed to and how many services I don't get my money's worth out of. So how many can I cut? First of all, I started with media. Netflix, HBO, which I guess is Max, Amazon Prime Video, Hulu, Paramount Plus, Peacock to watch the NFL playoffs, Apple TV Plus, because Ted Lasso was so good, Showtime, which I believe is attached to Hulu, Red Zone, so I could watch my NFL games without having to listen to the announcers or go to commercials, Spotify, Zips Car Wash, which I basically got in the spring because of all the pollen that we get down here, AT&T Cellular, AT&T Wi-Fi, Chewy, for my dog. Everything starts adding up. I have at least 11 subscription services, of which, like some of them, I debate on whether I really need to cut them and whether they're attached to something else. So first, I looked at HBO Max. It's attached to my AT&T cellular service. So I guess I get that for free. It seems like Every cellular service attaches themselves to some streaming service, so they bundle it so you believe you're getting something for nothing. So I'm going to keep HBO. Netflix. Netflix has been my go-to when I'm bored. There's always something good on Netflix, but quite frankly, after the good, there's just a lot of bad, particularly recently when after last year's 6 months of writer's strike and actor's strike, they had to dust off things or pull things out of the archive or at least pull things out they were not thinking of launching, but what else do they have? So they started launching it. So now I'm watching Netflix and I'm like, you know what? I'm cutting it. I'm taking my chances. Hulu, Paramount Plus, Peacock, I'm getting rid of all of them. Apple TV Plus, there's always a good series. I like Apple TV. And Showtime, which is bundled with Hulu. Again, what happens here is in each one of these, or some, you're talking to one of your friends and like, you've got to see X, Y, and Z. Greatest series or greatest movie they've seen. So now it's like, how do I find this? So I've got Roku TV. All I've got to do is query in Roku the name of the title, and it's going to tell me what streaming service it's on. Otherwise, you're going into each streaming service trying to find that title, and that is a headache. So anyway, I decide, okay, Netflix is gone, and I'm going to deal with it until some great series comes on that everybody says you can't live without, and then maybe I subscribe again, and hopefully I don't remember to unsubscribe. So Hulu, Paramount Plus, Peacock, they're gone until I have to watch some sporting event that is only proprietary on this service. And then I get to Red Zone. NFL is done. So I don't have to worry about that until August, maybe even September or October of next year. When the football season starts in August, I'm just not interested yet. I don't like the preseason games, and the first few games are snoozers. And then we get to Zips Car Wash. Do I really need to spend $20 a month in hopes that I'm going to wash my car at least four times a month? And the answer to that is it depends on how many times Sammy is in the car and how many times I take her to the beach. Because when I take her to the beach, she goes apeshit. She runs in the water. She runs out. She rolls in the sand. Whenever she smells some kind of dead fish or crab, she's got a rubber body in it. I can't stop her because I unleash her. And so when I get her back, I've got to drive back with her before I wash her, which, by the way, she hates. And then even though I've got this backseat cover, which is like the greatest invention ever for anybody who has dogs in their backseat, hair still gets all over the place. So I might quit Zips, but probably until the pollen comes again. AT&T cellular and Wi-Fi, I got to keep it. I just don't want to go on some $2 cellular service and go, to a shitty phone. And then Chewy, I don't know. I mean, it's cheaper, but it's just like automatically it keeps coming. Oh, I forgot one. I ended up doing BarkBox. Now, BarkBox is a service where every month you get this one or two toys and some treats for your dog, which I thought was kind of cute. I was up at somebody else's house. They had it for their dogs, and I thought, why not? And during any kind of themed event like Christmas, Thanksgiving, you're going to get a toy that is themed for that holiday, which I think is really cute. But here's the rub. When you sign up for BarkBox, you don't sign up for month by month with cancellation. You sign up for the entire year, and it's taken once a month. I try to actually cancel it because my dog doesn't need those treats that go with it, and I could buy some of those Chewy toys that she's going to rip apart anyway cheaper on Amazon or at Walmart. But here's the rub. They won't let me cancel. They won't. It's like the mob. It's like once you get in, you don't get out. And then I'm remembering I actually cut Sirius XM a year ago. They have this unique pricing structure where they're going to charge you like $20 a month unless you call them. You can't write them. You have to call them, and then you get somebody across the world, someplace on some island that's talking to you through a computer, and as soon as you tell them you're going to cancel, they want to give you a cheaper rate. And if you do cancel, they're going to keep calling you once a month to give you some rate, like $4 a month for so many months. Now, that's not a bad deal. But here's the thing. I listen to music, and I listen to like 5 or 6 different podcasts all through Spotify. Now that I can Bluetooth my Spotify in my car, I don't need XM Sirius Radio. I can curate my own playlists. I can prioritize my top podcasts, and I could listen to that anywhere I drive. So SiriusXM, if you're not bought by, or if you don't buy another streaming service, I just don't see the need for you in the future. So since I've written this, before I recorded this, I actually cut a bunch of streaming services. I kept Max because it's free. It's attached to AT&T Cellular. I've kept Amazon Prime Video because it's attached to my Amazon Prime. Most everything that I shop for, I get on Amazon Prime. And that's it. The rest are gone. It's going to force me to start picking up some books and reading. And when anybody starts telling me about some great new show, I'm going to have to think twice about whether I want to get into streaming another service. And after I say that, I just learned that Oppenheimer is going to be streaming for free on Peacock. Darn it. All right, now you got 3 years to stop eating dogs.
We eat here pigs, cows, chickens. Is it right that we should be saying to other countries that they can't eat dogs?
I don't think we should interfere with any other countries' cultures and the way they eat. It's not something I want to do. I'm just like Sam Cowell. I've got a lovely dog of my own, and I wouldn't dream of eating her. And I wouldn't dream of eating dog knowingly. But the point is, 10 million dogs in China and Southeast Asia are eaten every year.
All right, before anybody gets bent out of shape, understand that there might not be one globally accepted diet for all of us on this planet, but there should be a filter for animal cruelty. Now, just because you and I might like a steak, shrimp, scampi, chicken, or pork in the smoker, pepperoni pizza, doesn't mean that South Koreans aren't enjoying the same thing out of eating dog. Well, that pleasure has been voted out of the entire country with a 3-year grace period to remove it from all menus and food stores. The common dish in South Korea, and I'm going to butcher this word, is bojintang, boiled dog meat with onions. And to be fair, only around 8% of the South Koreans were said to have eaten dog in the past year. And it might just be like a boomer thing, like bologna sandwiches and Yoo-hoo here in the United States. By the way, what part of the pig or cow is bologna? So in South Korea, the government has basically said to food companies in the dog-to-table industry, they have 3 years to shut it down. Meanwhile, here in the United States, the feds have sent a direction to highway signs. You've got 2 years to stop being funny. Now, I must be living under a rock for the last several years, or just haven't traveled America's highways since the pandemic, but I haven't seen any of these funny signs. But after reading Allison Pohl's article in the Journal about the shutdown, I just had to laugh. So like some of these signs in the Northeast would be, use ya blinka. Or during the holidays, driving basted is for turkeys. Use headlights like Rudolph uses his red nose. You know, I've forgotten how many cars you actually have to turn on your headlights after you start your car. during Halloween, a sign that said, "Make Mummy Happy, Buckle Up." The Federal Highway Commission with the DOT issued new guidelines on traffic safety messages. Signs should use language that does not use pop culture references or humor. What the fuck? But they go on to say, you know, it's okay to have a sign that says unbuckled seatbelts equals fines and points. That's just not funny. And I guess maybe that's the point. The government is not here for our entertainment or enjoyment. It's here to provide us liberty and justice for all. I'm a big fan of both of those. But I also think there are different ways to message people to get the point across. So I direct your attention to every insurance company's message through their marketing campaigns. Quirky geckos, evolved cavemen, Flo, Patrick Mahomes, Ludacris, the don't be your parent guy, all joking about insurance. And insurance happens typically when the worst thing in your life could possibly happen to you. Why wouldn't the signs do the same thing? They all attempt to improve brand recall. Why can't witty e-signs do the same thing? But in this situation, the brand is yourself, and smart driving preserves it. So the feds are giving us 2 years to dumb down the funny, and the South Korean government are permitting their people to eat farm-raised dogs for 3 more years. I mean, what's the world coming to when it takes a year longer to stop killing man's best friend than it does to stop being funny? You know, I thought I'd end this episode with another golf epiphany about the loss and rediscovery of your swing mid-round. Golf, she is a fickle lady. She can tickle your undercarriage and choke you out during the same round. And no, I'm not referring to my dating life, because we've agreed there'll be no asphyxiation-assisted orgasms without written approval. I'm talking about the elation and broken hearts that can occur between the first tee and the 18th green. There are so many things that a golfer has to do right to hit a great shot. There are a few good things that a golfer has to do to hit a good shot. But there is just one bad thing to hit a horrible shot. And that one thing can differ every swing. Bad grip, bad setup, bad weight shift, bad posture, bad angle of approach, bad connection with the ball, bad bounce, bad lie, bad green surface. So imagine what it's like to do a lot of good things in a row for several holes, maybe even the front nine. And then as you get to the back nine, one of those horrible things rears its ugly head, and it's double bogey after double bogey. And you're about to throw yourself into the alligator-infested lake, and all of a sudden, you're back on track again. You're doing a lot of great things again. I played with this guy the other day, and let's just call him the Mad Hatter. It should be the Mad Hitter. He was off his game, calling his name out a lot, gets to this par three on the back nine with 100 yards of marsh between him and the green. He takes his club back, he hits his ball, and dunks the ball into the marsh, which is then followed up with his club slammed down on the ground and the head of his iron flies off the shaft. I figured the guy, who happened to be my partner, for the next few holes would just stay broken inside for the remaining 4 holes. But the next hole, he starts to show some life, and then he pars out for the remaining 3 holes and wins himself $10 and couldn't be happier when he gets off the 18th green. Well, he might have had to spend $60 the next day for a new shaft, but he somehow found his way to fix his mistakes on the course. Now, until I get to warmer weather, I find myself Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hiding It almost every round. It's something about the cold weather, the hard ground. I could make up 1,000 excuses. The sun is in my eyes. Who knows what it is? But I seem to find the answer when I get into better weather. And then when I find the answer a few holes later, even though I found the answer, I forgot the question. As long as we age, our mind-body connection gets interrupted by distractions, injuries, and sometimes a juvenile disobedience between the swing plan and execution. And that brings me back to my earlier profundity. There's one thing that helps golf execution more than anything else, and it's practice, practice, practice. So, that being said, I'm off to the practice area to tame the beast.
You've been listening to another episode from Tales from the First Tee. I'm your host, Rich Easton, telling tales from beautiful Charleston, South Carolina. Talk to you soon.